But we're going to start now, Huey. My producer, Huey. I can see him down there. Right, here we go. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you are in the world. This is Brunch Boxer. I'm your host, Matt. And I'm here with a very special guest, one of the best featherweights in the world. He's basically top 10 in every sanctioned body, top 10 on BoxRec. He used to be one of the best super bantamweights in the world, but now he's at featherweight. I'm talking about the beast, Rais Salim. What's going on, Rais?
Yo, 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 what's up? Thank you guys for having me.
So listen, I appreciate you coming on the show. You're just coming off an excellent win on Sunday against Rudy Garcia. You're at featherweight now. Just tell us about your last fight and tell us what it is you want to accomplish at featherweight.
Man, it was a hell of a fight. You know, Rudy Garcia, hey, you know, shout out to him. You know, he is tough. I'm not going to lie. I want to push it. I want to get that knockout, you know. It's just I wasn't able to perform at my standards. You know, it was a tough fight. Like I said, like, hey, every fight at this level is extremely tough. But, you know, I got the job done, and that's all that matters, you know. And I'm looking for all the big fights at 126. You know, it's my second fight in the division. You know, shout out to Angelo Leo. You know, he's the world champ right now. He's got a fight coming up. You know, so I want that fight. You know, Espinoza fought a one-dimensional fighter. You know, I wasn't impressed. You know, I thought it was a little early stoppage. He was going to beat the guy anyway, but I want that fight, you know. And, hey, even Shushu can get it. You know, he out here calling out all the champs, but he ain't fought nobody. So, like, you know, I want to make some shit happen, and I'm ready for it.
Absolutely. And now you're with a new team. I saw that you recently started fighting on Top Rank cards. Are you signed to Top Rank, or is this like a fight-by-fight thing?
You know, this is kind of like a fight-by-fight thing. You know, I got a lot of respect and huge shout-out to, you know, Bob Arum and Brad Goodman, you know, for giving me the opportunity, you know, to fight on their platform. You know, it's kind of more of a fight-by-fight thing, but I think this next fight, it's got to be big. You feel me? It's got to be the world title fight, you know? And I'm ready for it, you know? So we'll see what happens next, but it's going to be something big for sure.
Definitely. Now, you did fight this past Sunday on Nia Inoue's card. I know, I feel like it was just yesterday, but it was like 2 years ago when you were calling for that Nia Inoue fight, you know? You had Stephen Fulton in the division also. It was basically you, Inoue, Fulton, and a couple other guys at 122 that were like the guys up there. So why did those fights never happen? Like you were Inoue and you and Scooter Fulton.
Honestly, you know, that's a tough question to answer. Because, you know, when I was with PBC and everything, I won like 3 world title or eliminator fights. You know, I had 4 of them and, you know, ended up, the one didn't go the way it should have went. You know, I feel like I was robbed, but, you know, it is what it is. But that's a good question, you know. So I'm just hoping with Top Rank, you know, they got the pull and everything to really make this shit happen because nobody got paid step aside money. You know, I should have been had my world title shot at 22. So I don't know what really happened with that. You know, Fulton was ducking like a, you know, like crazy, you know, and even Figueroa, me and Figueroa was supposed to fight last year at T-Mobile at 126. You know, he pulled out and chose to fight Jesse Magliano, and we was in camp for like 40 days. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like it was something that just, you know, all of a sudden it's like, yo, we was in camp and shit was agreed to and, you know, that's boxing, but it is what it is. But, you know, I'm just hoping Top Rank can make the shit happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, obviously, you're at 126 now. You mentioned Angelo Leo. You mentioned Rafael Espinosa, Shushu. You know, we got quite a few guys at 126 pounds. Where do you feel like you fit into that landscape at 126 pounds?
Man, hey, yo, 126 is fucking stacked. And at the end of the day, I'm a top fighter. I'm right fucking there. I feel like I'm, you know, top three. You know, I'm within the top five. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not number five. That's the thing. You know, these dudes don't want to fight. Even Espinoza, it was really between Vasquez and me. You know what I'm saying? You the champ. You can fight this guy or you can fight fucking Aleem. You know, he chose to fight Vasquez, a one-dimensional fighter. You know, but I was lined up and training for that fight. You know, they didn't give me Rudy Garcia until like a month ago. But I was like, okay, it's about to be me and Espinoza. You know what I'm saying? And it didn't, you know, it didn't go through. It's boxing. He chose to fight somebody else. But I got to force these guys to get those big fights so I can show everybody, hey, look, I'm not only within the top five, I'm number one. Just like at fucking 22, all I need is that shot, and it's gonna happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, do you ever feel like, we know how boxing politics work, you know, sometimes guys choose who they pass over. They don't want to fight this guy. They don't want to fight that guy. Do you feel like you might have to end up going, like, the mandatory route in order to finally get your title shot?
Yeah. Like, you know, that it's going to have to be that way. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, hey, look, Shushu trying to call out all the champs. He ain't fought nobody. Me and him can fight and make that shit happen yesterday. But, you know, he don't want it, you know, so, and I can't blame him. He's going to want to fight a champion. It's too much of a risk. It's business, you know. Espinoza, like, yeah, so I got to be a mandatory to make these dudes take the fights, because boxing used to be the best fighting the motherfucking best. You wanted to fight the best. Now it's too much of a fucking risk. So, you know, and that's politics and business. But, I got to be a mandatory so I get mine.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to bring in my co-host of Bunch Boxing, my guy Ezra Boxer. Ez, you here with us, Ezra?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, all right. You're on with the beast, Rai Salim.
You know what I wanted to ask, and I don't think you've asked this yet, but you came from like a kung fu. You did kung fu before you did boxing, correct? Am I correct?
Yeah, Muquan Taekwondo.
Okay,
so, kung fu box or kung fu karate. Yeah.
How do you feel that affected your boxing game or helped your boxing game? I'm curious. Like when you came into it,
like that was everything. You know, so like I knew how to fight. Before I started boxing, you know, I got my black belt in karate. I'm a first-degree black belt, Muquan Taekwondo. It also taught me how to be humble, you know, never to get the big head. You know, it just helped me tremendously, you know, just on my feet and everything, you know. Karate was really key to translating over to boxing.
I feel like I kind of see it in your game. Do you see it in your game when you box? Like, do you see some of the things that you took from there to imply it?
Yeah. You know, and like I said, like, I feel like karate really allowed me not to be a one-dimensional fighter, not to get in the ring and only move to my right or only move to my left. You know, I got a lot of tools in the fucking box to work with. And a lot of fighters can't say that, you know, and I've been fighting at an extremely high level for a very, very fucking long time. You know, you gotta understand, it's like most of my fucking life I've been in sports. You know, I was in the karate gym at the age of 3. You know, played some football, played some basketball, and was boxing and shit like that. I've always been into sports. So I'm extremely athletic. When I step in the ring with somebody, I'm faster than what they think. I'm stronger, I'm sharper than what they think or, like, what they see on film. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it gives me a big advantage.
No, well,
I'm curious about that. What made you actually go with the boxing route? Because like you said, you were basically well-rounded as an athlete growing up. What made you decide on going into the sport of boxing as your chosen profession?
Well, shit, it was my pops, you feel me? It's like, so he had my brothers and sisters in, like, singing lessons, guitar lessons, and stuff like that. And, you know, I was in sports. And, you know, after I got my black belt in karate, it was kind of like, what's next? You know, so he took me to the boxing gym. And, you know, at the time, you know, there was this kid named Joe Flores. You know, he was the best kid in the gym of all the little kids. You know, he had amateur fights, 30-some amateur fights. we spar and I beat the shit out of him with no boxing training or anything. And that's how I met my original boxing coach, Terry Markowski, who is my father figure. Like, I literally wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for Terry Markowski. And that goes to show, it's like, it only takes one person to, like, change somebody's fucking life, you know, just to give a fuck. You can change somebody's life, you know, and he did that for me.
That is dope. That is dope. Go ahead, Ezra. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, no, you're good. You're good. I was just going to ask, you know, we've seen, you're at 126. We've seen Inoue at 122. He's seen the canvas twice now at 122. Do you, you coming from 122, what do you think of him at 126? You think it'll be too big for him? Do you think...
Honestly, like, yo, I don't think he can do at 126 what he's done in these other, you know, weight classes. Because it's like your power has to transfer over type shit. But not only that, the dudes are bigger, the dudes are stronger. You got to be able to take the fucking hits. If you getting dropped at 22... You come on, like 26? Nah, because there's some fucking dogs, you know, in every weight class. But like, I don't see it happening like that at 26 for him. No, I mean, if you got a stand like that, like I've never been down in my career. I've never even been staggered in my career, you know. And I've taken some shots. It just comes with the territory. But I don't see him doing it at 26. Nah.
Do you think that as, like, boxing fans or people that cover the sport, do they talk about durability enough? Like, I noticed that we talk about, like, oh, this guy gets hit here, and then, you know, oh, he might get stopped because he gets hit too much. But do you think we should consider durability? Like you said, you've been hit, but you don't feel like you've ever been hurt. Is that durability, is that a major factor here?
1,000%. And that's why having an amateur background is so important. Because you get the experience from being an amateur. I'm talking about, like, I remember being at the Nationals, you know, and, like, my legs are in quicksand. I can't move my fucking legs, but I fought through it, and I end up winning. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's that experience that you want to go through in the amateurs, you know, that so when you go through it as a pro, you know how to handle yourself. And shit, I've been hit so motherfucking hard. Like, I seen motherfucking stars. I'm like, oh, shit, what the fuck? And I fought through that, and I won. You know, but you still want to experience that as an amateur and not a pro for the first time. But even if it happens, yeah, durability matters. To be able to go 10 rounds, to be able to go 12 rounds, and you got caught clean with a few different shots. But to be able to hold your composure, you know, like, I've been cut over my eye and blood running down to my eyes, and I stay laser fucking focused like it never happened. I'm not poking at the eye and shit. I'll do that when I get to the corner. But that's experience. That's knowing, like, hey, you're really in fucking war. Like, this motherfucker, he's trying to knock you out. Like, what the fuck is he doing right now? So, you know, when that's your mindset, you move differently. But durability, that's a huge attribute, that's a huge factor to boxing, period.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, I wanted to bring in my guy, my mentor, the host of the Boxing Source radio show on YouTube and Spotify, JR Bell, JBZ. What's going on, JR? You're on with the beast, Rais Aleem.
What's going on, brother Matt? Ezra in the building. Rais the Beast, what's happening, man?
Yo, what's up?
Yeah, man, all good. When they were talking about the top five, I thought you were going to say that you're number one, two, three, four, and five. given, you know, your last performance there at the T-Mobile Arena, it looks like they have you currently ranked number seven in the IBF. But, you know, that may change, you may go up. So there's a key bout there with Angelo Leo and Tomoki Kameda. So after that bout, that's in a few weeks, maybe you have to push to try to get that as your world title shot, because the winner of that will have to, you know, find a voluntary defense at the very least. So you could be right up there at the top for that.
Exactly, you know, and that's the situation I'm trying to put myself in. You know, I'm ready for the big fights. You know, I'm here. I'm not ducking. I'm not dodging nobody. You know, we just got to put pen to fucking paper and make this shit happen. But not only that, give a great fight to the boxing fans. You know, to the boxing world. You know, they all fucking deserve it.
Yes, definitely. Go ahead, JR. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Oh, no, no problem. Yeah, with that being said, if that opportunity doesn't quite come up, there might be another possible opponent that I see in Suleiman Sagawa that was a former opponent there for Bruce Carrington. So that could be another one. No, but
come on. That's a southpaw, right? Southpaw dude?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know, hey, Matt, I know, Matt, you...
I've been following Rice Salim for years. You know, my homegirl Emily, PR extraordinaire, she used to actually match make some of Rice's early fights, and she wanted me to tell you hello, by the way.
All right, so when I make a particular phone call, I won't mention his name then.
So definitely not Elijah Garcia. Come on, man. Or Elijah Pierce. No, we're good. But let me ask you, because, listen, we know you wanted to fight Inoue when you were in the lower weight. Inoue eventually is going to come up to 126. Is that a fight that you're still interested in having during your career?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I'm still interested in having that fight because, you know, he's viewed by, you know, a lot of boxing fans, you know, and really the world as one of the best fighters to ever fight. So, you know, and that's the thing about a lot of fighters. It's like there's a lot of cherry-picking motherfuckers out here. It's like I want to fight the best. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to fight the fucking best because, like, this is why I'm in the sport. Rais, the Beast, Aleem. I want to fight the best, and I want to prove I'm one of the best. You know? Hey, shout out to Marvelous Marvin Hagler. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like I'm him in a new fucking generation. But, yeah, I would love that fight, you know, besides the payday and this and that, because he's considered as one of the fucking best. And what have I done my whole career? Besides retired fighters and embarrassed fighters, all I fucking done was win. I just need that chance and that opportunity.
I agree. Now the one fight you didn't win, I wanted to go back to that. That was the Sam Goodman fight. Yeah. You know, obviously you felt like you should have came away with the decision. But what happened in that estimation in your fight that made it so close to begin with that he was able to come away with the decision against you?
Right. Well, so, you know, it's like, I haven't really spoke a whole lot about it only because it's like, it don't fucking matter. You know, at the end of the day, we're all warriors. You know what I'm saying? When you show up in the ring, it doesn't matter what the fuck you're going through. It's a death. It's this, it's that. I have a sleep disorder, like diagnosed with a sleep disorder. I'm supposed to, you know, doctor recommended take Ambien and shit. I can't do that. I got no fucking sleep, you know, and it wasn't anxiety or anything like that. Like, you know, my sleep was fucked. The time change was fucked. I still felt like I did good enough to win because at my worst, I still fucking beat you at your best. I lost a 12-round 3-2 split in your fucking country. You know, I didn't drop him. I didn't stop him. I didn't execute how I wanted to, but I still did enough to win. You know, but it didn't go my way. And shit, still, it's boxing. You know, when you fight out the country, that's what you got to do. You got to stop them, drop them, something. But yeah, the fight was closer than what it should have been. You know, I've been, you know, talking to the, hey, rematch, you know, that shit ain't going to fucking happen. Like, not even a little bit entertained, you know. And
yeah, that was one of the things I was going to ask you next about a rematch, like, because it was a very close fight, obviously.
Yeah, I was trying. Yeah, facts. Like, you know, I was trying. I was like, hey, yo, shit, especially if that shit's in the fucking States, ain't no way. Because I could have had that exact same fight, but in the States, I win. You know what I'm saying? But even still, it's like, hey, look, all right, fine. I'll go back out there. Give me that fucking rematch, you know? Like, what's up? But, you know, not even a little bit entertained, and I can't control that. You know, that's just what it is. And shit, even my last fight, because I have a sleep disorder, like 3 hours of fucking sleep. Like, fuck. You know, I'm tired and shit, but you find a way. Like, that's what boxing's about. You got to fucking, it doesn't matter what you're going through. Dig down and fucking find a way to win. And, you know, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get the job done.
I wanted to talk to you about that sleep disorder, because that's really interesting, especially coming from a professional athlete, like a fighter. Like, how long ago was you, like, diagnosed with that? And, what made you actually go get tested? Like, what was going on with you that you felt like, yo, something's not right with me?
Man, because it's like, yo, you know, I'll have, like, fucking sleepless nights and shit. And it's like, yo, when you got to train the next day, it could just be sparring. You know what I'm saying? But you got no sleep. You're fucking drained and you got to go spar 10 rounds, 12 rounds. Shit, don't matter, 6 rounds. It just, it affects you as a fighter, period. You know, really, not even just a fighter, any athlete. You got to track meet and you didn't get no fucking sleep. Usain Bolt ain't breaking no fucking record, you know. But yeah, I was like, you know what? I got to do this fucking sleep study shit. I got to see what's up. I got to see a doctor. You know, this was a minute ago. This was actually after the Australia fight, because I'm like, hey, yo, I couldn't fucking sleep. And it wasn't anxiety, because anxiety is when your mind's like fucking running. You know, but your body is tired. This is kind of like the opposite. My mind is tired. Like, I'm trying to go to sleep, but my body is tossing and turning. Like, I can't, like, you know, that's why they were saying, like, take Ambien and shit. But, I ain't doing all that. But it is what it is. It's something I've been fighting through for a while. Like, yeah, I take melatonin, Z-Quil, Benadryl. I'll take all 3 sometimes if I got to. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes it works. Sometimes it don't. It's just something you gotta, you know, adjust to and live with, really, you know.
Do you have any, because obviously it probably affected you while you was in Australia, and you did mention, like, even recently, you only got, like, 3 hours of sleep. Like, are you at all worried that it's gonna, like, really start to affect your performance as you start getting the bigger fights against the higher level opponents?
Well, it's like, it just kind of is what it is. It's like, you know, I had a certain standard in my mind to what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do it. And the shit, just getting 3 hours of fucking sleep made it 10 times harder. You know, that could be literally the difference between winning and losing. But that also comes with adversity, you know, and trials and tribulations. And at the end of the day, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, nobody fucking cares. It's like, you got to get the job done. You just got to find a way, you know? And, I'm worried, but for different reasons. I mean, shit, like, at this point in time, it just is what it is. I'm not going to use it as an excuse. I don't give a fuck if I got no sleep. I'm going to do whatever it takes to find a motherfucking way to win. Clean fight, ugly fight, dog fight. It can be all 3. Raheem Salim's going to come out on top because I got to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That, you know, because that is very interesting to me, man, because it's not often that fighters talk about, you know, the stuff that they're going through going into a fight. You know, you might, hey, who knows? You might help somebody out there who might be going through the same thing, but didn't want to say anything. But they hear Raheem Salim talking about it. They was like, yo, maybe it is okay for me to talk about it out loud, maybe go get some help, something like that, you know?
Yeah, no, facts. I'm sure, you know, I'm damn near almost positive I'm not the only fighter who has gone through this or is still currently going through this. You know, you might have retired fighters who've gone through this and maybe they didn't go do a sleep study or whatever. It's just, you know, it is what it is. It's life. Life is all about growth, and so is boxing. You know, it's like, hey, look, this is the situation. It ain't no fucking excuse. What's up? What the fuck you gonna do about it? You know, it can't cry about it, can't really talk about it unless you know what I'm saying, we doing some shit like this. Otherwise, hey, what's up? Put me in the game, coach.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, you did mention your upbringing. Obviously, you played a lot of sports growing up. Your dad got you into boxing. You grew up in Muskegon, Michigan, right? I believe that's what I read.
Yeah. Hey, shout out to the 231 Muskegon, small town in Muskegon, Michigan.
Okay. So what was it like growing up out there? Obviously, small town. I don't know how far it is from Detroit. I only know Detroit, to be honest with you. That's the only part of Michigan I know. But, how far is that from, like, Detroit? And, like, what was it like growing up for you in Muskegon, Michigan?
So, you know, Muskegon is like 4 hours from Detroit, 4 hours from Chicago.
Damn. Yeah. That's real. Yeah, that's deep.
You know, 40 minutes from Grand Rapids, and that's originally where Floyd is from. You know, growing up was fucking hostile. I grew up in a hostile-ass environment. You know, I went from the hood, all-black school, you know, to all-white school in the middle of third grade. You feel me? Not knowing anything about race and this and that. And it's like, yo, you in the fucking Twilight Zone, because what the fuck is this right now? You know, and that's just life. But, you know, I was a kid. Shout out to my father, because we don't have a relationship. I haven't talked to him in, 11 years, you know. He was an actual, like, good parent, you know. He did what he had to do for his kids and shit. It was a hostile-ass environment. You know, he made his whoopings into a metaphor. Like, hey, you ain't getting the whooping. You getting the iron hand. You know what I'm saying? You getting your motherfucking ass beat. But he owned houses and shit. We'd have to go and rake the lawns and fucking clean out the refrigerators. People getting evicted. There's maggots and shit up in there. We got to paint walls and shit. I'm in third grade peeling motherfucking paint off my elbows. And, you know, I got all the white kids looking at me like, hey, yo, what the fuck? And, you know, that's just how it was. You know, I grew up in an extremely hostile environment. Was always in sports, you know, throughout all that. But that also taught me my work ethic. You know, I can do a fucking 3-a-day. I can do a 2-a-day. Nobody can motivate me. Like, I can wake up at 3 a.m. and fucking grind. 4 a.m. and grind. You know, that's why I've been able to fight at a high level for so long. Because nobody can make me do it. It's within me, but I fucking do it. You know,
You know, it's hard to believe you've been in the game for like damn near 15 years now. that's so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and the hardest part as a fighter is when I was 3-0. I fought on the Adrian Broner undercard back when HBO was still on. I was the first fight of the night. I fought my first undefeated fighter, 4-0, 3 knockouts, whatever. Dropped him in the first round, dominated. I beat him. And after that, nobody would fucking fight me. I went 2.5 years without a fucking fight. But I stayed in the gym and I stayed grinding and I stayed believing. You know, and then, you know, I signed with Cameron Duncan, and I'm like, bet. I got a manager now. He just gonna, you know, he gonna give me some fights, and I'm good. I just gotta be me. And I got some fights coming in, and the next year, you know, boom. Went another 2.5 fucking years without a fight. And I'm like, hey, yo, I got rid of Cameron, and I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna take my life and my career into my own hands. So I give the analogy like, hey, look, I took the keys to the fucking car. I took the keys to the Lambo and I drove to fucking Vegas. But the Lambo was a 99 Honda Accord. You know what I'm saying? But I drove to Vegas.
That was a good year. That was a good year.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure was a good year.
You know? Hey, drove to Vegas, no coach, no support system, nothing set up. I did this shit. Hey, yo, what's up, Rice? What you up to? Shit. Trying to find my way through the maze. You know what I'm saying?
During that time, I mean, how did you, make a living? Like, if you weren't getting fights and everything, what?
Well, okay, so when I first moved down here, you know, I saved up some money and shit. You know, can't do it broke, you know, so I saved up some money, you know. And I was out here in Vegas training just, you know, for the first 2 months. And I was like, all right, shit, I got to get a fucking job. You know, so I started working at a pawn shop, Easy Pawn. You know, it's my first job in Vegas. So it's boom, I'm training, boxing, and I'm working that. The hours is kind of fucked, but it is what it is. You know, and I meet this girl. She helps me get my guard card to do security. So I'm like, bet. You know what I'm saying? So now I got 3 jobs. But before I ended up quitting or whatever, I was training myself for 1.5 years, and I had an opportunity to fight an 8-0 fighter with motherfucking 8 knockouts. And I'm like, bet. And at this time, I'm 2.5 years without a fight, and I'm grinding. I'm training myself in a whole new motherfucking city. No coach, nothing. But, you know, belief in myself, and I'm fucking grinding. You know, that fighter was Marcus Bates. You know, I signed with Marshall Kaufman and King's Promotion to get that fight because, you know, they wasn't just going to give it to me. You know, so dropped him in the first round, dominated that whole fight, almost stopped him in the last round, and that started the domino effect. Because now I was with a smaller promoter, but I was with the promoter who's just going to feed me some fights so I can be Raiz the Beast Aleem. You know, and there's so many other fighters who've gone through worse shit and just never got a shot or did and whatever. But, you know, this is my story.
You know, the reason, too, I asked that about you working is because, you know, we just seen with Ramon Cardenas that a lot of people were kind of making jokes that, you know, at one point he was a Uber driver or Lyft driver or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe a lot of people are unaware that a lot of fighters have to have two jobs or three jobs like you did to make it. You know what I mean? To work their way up. And the thing is, it's not.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, my bad. I'm just saying, like, facts. Like, it's like, at one point in time, I'm like, hey, look, boxing's not paying the bills. Yeah, I'm not getting big enough paydays, but I'm also not fighting frequently. But it's like, okay, you're scheduled to fight in July. You don't, or January, that fight gets canceled. March gets canceled. July gets canceled. You know what I'm saying? So there's just so much shit that's up in the air. It's like, yeah. You gotta have a whole nother fucking job, which sucks, but that's just the fucking hand you're dealt.
And I was curious, is when you were training yourself for the fight, like how would you come up with a strategy? Like would you be watching film, or would you just have like, I have my style and I'm gonna apply it when I get in the ring?
No. So it's not just like I have my style and I'm gonna apply it in the ring. You know, for that particular fight, I watched some film on him and I was like, okay, you know, I seen how he fought. And then I was like, I know the things that I do good, so I'm going to do high percentage things. If I have a high percentage jab or a high percentage left hook, that's what I want to capitalize on. You know, I want to do the high percentage things, and I don't want to take chances and do this, this, and that, you know, so play it safe and this, this, and that. I had my father figure, my first boxing coach, Terry Markowski, fly out and work my corner for that fight. You know, not like we were in the gym training or nothing like that. Like, he flew straight from Michigan to just to work my corner. Hey, you got to find a fucking way. You know, I was actually training at Bones Adams gym, and Bones Adams eventually became my trainer. But because the fight was so close, matter of fact, I think I was sparring Nonito, too, at the time. Yeah, because Nonito was training at Bones' gym. So I was sparring Nonito Donaire, and you know, people see me in the gym, oh, this dude from Michigan, oh, you know, yeah, he's a fucking good fighter. And then, oh, why are you fighting this guy, 8-0? But what do you mean, why am I fighting him? Yeah, I'm fighting him because he's 8-0. He's undefeated. Like, I don't want to fight somebody who's fucking 8-5 or some shit like that. But, you know, everybody was telling me I was crazy. It's like, oh, you haven't fought in 2 years. Why? This is why I'm in the fucking sport of boxing. To fight the best, you know? So, yeah.
So, let me ask you, because you did mention that you basically had two long layoffs, 2.5-year layoffs, first with your first part of your career, then with Cameron Duncan, and now you're with, then you were with Marshall Kaufman. Like, mm-hmm. Like, why has it been so hard for you over the years to latch on with someone that could get you consistent fights?
You know, just the hand I'm dealt, you know, and it's the sport of boxing, and I'm not the only fighter. You know, you got top fighters out here. You got ex-world champions and everything, you know, signed with the, you know, I'm not going to necessarily say the promoter or whatever, and they're making like 15K or, you know, a fight and this, this, and that. And it's like, hey, look, you got to have a 9-to-5, and it's just, or they're just on the shelf. They're with the promoter, but they're not being moved. And for whatever reason, but it's really just the hand I was dealt. Hey, look, I'm from a small town in Michigan that nobody's heard of. I'm not the most, you know, I'm not the most cockiest guy or this, this, and that, or outspoken or whatever. You know, I've gone through what I've gone through in my life. That's why I move the way I move. I do the things I do. It's like, hey, look. You know, some people have never had a gun drawn on them. Maybe they have. maybe they continue to move the same way. Or maybe they're like, hey, look, I know what the fuck can happen. So, you know, it's just life. It's just the hand I'm dealt. But life's about chances and fucking opportunities. Every fucking chance, every opportunity I've had, I've capitalized on that shit. And, you know, a lot of fighters can't say that.
Now, speaking of opportunities, obviously, you've had the opportunity to fight on the last two Top Rank cards. How did that partnership come about with you and Top Rank?
Well, you know, at one point in time, I was going to sign with Top Rank, you know, but I was still kind of tied up with, like, you know, manager stuff and, you know, I'm waiting to get out of this contract and, you know, business, you know. But I do have a relationship with one of the matchmakers from Top Rank, Brad Goodman, you know, great matchmaker, great guy, you know, and I actually beat one of his fighters. Shit, I think I, like, embarrassed him. I don't know. Fuck, I might have even retired him. I'm not sure.
You're talking about Blue Nose? You're not talking about Blue Nose, right?
No, I think that was Vic Macias.
He was 16-0 when you fought him. Yeah, I remember that fight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You cooked him. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Exactly. So it was like, you know, that kind of was like, all right, like, hey, look, you know, give you a shot, a chance, you know? And you got, like, not this last fight, but the fight before that, when I fought in November, 18 months without a fucking fight, you know? But I've had fights fall through. I was supposed to fight Figueroa. Like I'm saying, like these, and the shit fell through. So, you know, and I was trying to get the Fulton fight, but then he chose to fight, what's his name? I can't even remember the dude's name. And that's when the dude dropped him. And I'm like, man.
You're talking about Carlos Castro.
Castro. I'm like, fuck. He ain't known to be a big puncher. Good fighter, decent fighter. But I'm like, fuck. That, I was trying to get that fight. Didn't, you know. So just to fucking hand your dope. You can't cry about it. You got to get in the fucking gym and just keep working with no guarantee of shit. That's what it is. When I went two and a half years without a fight, grinding with no fucking guarantee of shit twice.
Now, obviously, we know you're a good fighter, top level fighter. You have like a big personality. Like people seem to gravitate towards you, but you haven't been able to get the fights necessarily that you want. Like, why didn't it work out with like you and PBC? Because I remember you was fighting on a lot of PBC cards for a while.
Yeah. You know, the contract came up, you know, and like, you know, when things with contracts, you know, you look at minimums, you look at how many times you want to fight and, you know, things like that. And it's like, well, shit, if we do the math, how many fights have they thrown? You know, how many times was I fighting? I was like fighting like once a fucking year, you know, and, you know, I got a lot of love and respect for PBC and, you know, they did a lot for my career and stuff like that. It just, business is business and that shit just fizzled the fuck out.
But obviously there's like no bad blood between you guys. Well, no. Like it, you know, okay.
No, not at all. No bad blood. You know, I got it's all love and respect. You know, to them and everything, and you know, same vice versa. It's, no, not bad at all.
What is it going to take for you to get like a longer term deal with Top Rank? Like, what's the game plan with that? Like, have you discussed like a pathway to like a long term partnership, or anything like that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, see, what it's going to take is well, obviously, you know, you got to win. But it's like this next fight, it's projected to be a title fight, whether that's, you know, with Angelo Leo or Espinoza, or if I got to steal Shushu's belt. You know what I'm saying? Like, he ain't the champ, but, I mean.
Yeah, and listen, it might be Shushu, because I know Stephen Fulton's moving up to fight Oshaki Foster.
Exactly.
So that WBC might either become vacant or they might, like, do like an interim so he could decide if he wants to come back down or not. So
exactly. Yeah.
That, if you could pick one of those guys though to fight in that weight, who would be your number one pick to pick?
Are you talking about between the three guys, Angelo, yeah. Espinoza, yeah. Fulton? I mean, shit, hey, Espinoza, I like that fight. I like the Angelo Leo fight too. You know, he's a great fighter. I mean, fuck, we've sparred 10 rounds, 12 rounds and shit like that, you know? So he's a little bit familiar with my game. I'm a little bit familiar with his game. But Angelo Leo, I feel like that's probably the easiest. Espinoza is harder, but I would want Espinoza. That's the harder fight. But I mean, shit, yeah, that would be the fight that I would want.
Hey, man. Listen, man, Espinosa cracking, man. His fight with Ken Vasquez, I thought Ken Vasquez had a chance to like either win or take it to the cards. I was surprised at how easily Espinosa beat him up. Were you doing like any scouting in that fight because you know you might have to see Espinosa in the future?
Well, I mean, it was between me and Vasquez who was even going to get that fight. You know, it was, hey, you can fight Aleem or you can fight Vasquez or you're not fighting on this card. You know what I'm saying? And he chose Vasquez. You know, so was I scouting the fight? Yeah, I was scouting the fight. And Vasquez should have been able to hit him how he was hitting him. I'm like, okay, well, fuck. He just throwing a lazy fucking left hook, a lazy right hook and catching him and doing some shit to the body. Espinosa, you know, okay, Vasquez didn't block not one uppercut. He didn't make a miss, not one uppercut. So what did that do? That led to him being able to open up and do more things and then throw some flurries. He didn't create not one angle. He didn't get behind him. So I'm like, okay, he's fighting one-dimensional fighters. What happens when he fights somebody who is capable of doing more? You know, like a fighter like me. So it's like,
That's something that I would love to find out, man, because I think you versus Espinosa is a great matchup. I think all the fans will be behind that one. That's
yeah, and then he's been down before. So it's like, okay, he can be dropped. He can be stopped. What's up? But, I mean, that's the harder fight. But, yeah, that's the fight I would want. You know, Angelo's a great fighter, too. But, it's you know, I feel like that's still a harder fight. Because, like, let's be real. Every fight at this level is extremely fucking hard. But that's an easier fight than fucking Espinosa.
Now, are there any fights at 122 that you might go back down for, or are you done with 122?
Hey, man, yeah, there ain't no way I can go back to 122. It's like, shit, I would take a fight at 130 before I go to motherfucking 122.
You know, I have a question about this, about moving up in weight. And this is more just like a personal thing with other people I've talked to. But when you move up in weight, is it because your walk around weight went up, or is it just because you just can't burn it off like you used to with certain weight?
It's kind of more so you just can't lose it anymore. You know, it's like it's going to, like, you already kill yourself to make weight. And now you're just killing yourself even more and you get close. You know, you can't even fucking make it anymore. So I feel like that is more the determining factor. It's like, goddamn, making 26 is hard now. You know what I'm saying? Compared to like, fuck, I don't even know how I was fighting at 22. You know, it's like, shit, it's hard to make 26 right now. But that's the problem that you want to have. You know what I'm saying? You move up to 130, you want it to be hard to make 130. Because if it's not, you're probably not in the right fucking weight class. Because you're fighting guys who are dropping a crazy amount of weight to, you know, make that weight only to jump back up.
So if there ain't no pain in it, you might be getting lazy about it? If there ain't no pain in making the weight, then you might need to keep going down.
I mean, yeah, honestly, probably. Because it's like sometimes, hey, making weight's harder than the fucking fight. You know, like what a lot of boxing fans don't understand is like the preparation that goes into each and every fucking fight, especially if you're a top fighter. You know, it's building yourself up, you know, staying on your diet, making sacrifices, you know, the belief, the doubt, the trials, the tribulations, every fucking thing that leads up to it. And this could be months out, weeks out, days out. It's part of the game. You know, but it takes a fucking toll on you mentally. Like, it's a fucking lot. That's like when you win the world title and you're fucking crying your eyes out on national TV or whatever. It's like every fucking thing you did to fucking get there for a chance. Because winning takes everything and ain't shit guaranteed, especially in the sport of boxing.
No, you're absolutely right about that, man. So who's your team now? Like, obviously, we know Cameron Duncan is no longer here. I don't think you're with Marshall Corbin anymore. Like, who is representing you? Who's fighting for Rais Salim?
Well, you know, right now I'm tied in with Top Rank. You know, I got rid of my manager because, you know, like, shit. Like, manager has to do the manager's job. You know, the promoter can't do the manager's job for him because why are you paying the manager 20%? So when you look at shit from a business perspective, once you've been in the game for a while, it's, you know, shit's a little bit different, you know? So I do got some people advocating for me and stuff. Oh, you know, I'm tied in with Top Rank right now. You know, we're hoping on a big fight next. I'm not straight up signed with the manager right now. It's honestly something I'm trying to avoid because at this point in the game, I know all the players and all the players know me. So, you know, what's up? So, as far as a promoter, I'm hoping me and Top Rank can get a long-term deal. I'm hoping this next fight's a world title fight. And, you know, I'll win that, and then shit will be kind of put in stone. But until then, you know, it's back to the daily grind.
Obviously, we know you took 2.5 years off. You had a long layoff. You fought, I think, once last year. You fought again this year. How many times this year do you want to fight?
I mean, you know, it'd be nice to fight 2 more times. Like, that'd be fucking dope. But realistically, you know, I'll probably end up only fighting 1 more time this year. Like I said, if it was my choice, I would definitely fight 2 more times. You know, be back in, September? And then be back again in December, you know? So that would be ideal, but... You know, I don't really see that in the cards. I just see me fight 1 more time this year. But I still see that fight being, you know, a title eliminator fight or a world title fight. Because what the fuck is we doing? You know, we trying to make it happen and we'll see.
Now, if all goes according to plan, can we start seeing you in the ring more often than the start and stop nature of, you know, the last like 4 or 5 years for you?
Yes, 100%. Definitely see me in the ring more often. And the thing is, it's not like I was off due to injury or willingly just, you know, stepping away, taking some time off. Fuck, I've stayed in the fucking gym, you know, like, so yeah, I definitely see me fighting more often for sure.
That's dope. That's dope, man. Because, you know, it seems like you have a really good relationship with the fans because I know a lot of people that was out there in Vegas and they were like, you were like very like gracious with the fans, taking time to talk to all the fans and stuff like that. Like how did that part of your personality come about to where like basically you're like the mayor of every card that you're on?
Well, I mean, it's like at the end of the day, I'm a people person. I can relate, you know, but I have an underdog mentality, you know, and the underdog mentality is it's never fucking good enough. You're always kicking the fucking bar further and further and further. You know, I haven't been proud of myself after a fight since really I fought in Cali. That was like, what, 4 or 5 fights ago? You know, it's just the bar just continues to get kicked. And you have to love all your fans, you know, because all the sacrifices, the odds of me fucking being even in Vegas right now, doing what I'm doing, being from a small town in Muskegon, Michigan, it's extremely fucking slim. You know, like, what are the fucking odds? A guy from a small town nobody's heard of with no fucking support system, no silver fucking spoon, worked his way to where the fuck I'm at now. I've accomplished the things that I've accomplished. Like, what? You know, is and there's a lot of fighters out there. You know, there's a lot of fighters out there who you don't know their story. But, you know, I can only speak on me and what I'm going through. And this is my fucking story. And it's like, God damn. You know, okay, we can use Fulton as an example. Now, he's a great fighter, world champion, everything, but the path he took to get to where he's at was fucking easy. He had everything given to him. He earned it. He earned every fucking fight, every win, but the path to get there was so fucking easy. I went 2.5 years twice in my career at 2 different times without a fight. You know, there's a lot of fighters with depression. You know, the ups, the downs, the fucking, just everything. You know, you crying, you're driving to the gym and motherfucking tears coming down your face. And it's not because you're sad. It's because the path that you have to fucking go through to get to where you want to go to for a fucking chance. You know, it's just, hey, it just is what it is, you know? So I love all my fans, you know? I love my fans. Shit, I even like my haters. You know, it's like, hey, what's up? You hating for a motherfucking reason. I see you.
Listen, I don't think you have very many haters, man. It's hard to find somebody to say a bad word about you. But I wanted to talk more about the mental health aspect, the grind, you know, trying to get a chance. Something like you mentioned, sometimes you probably go through depression. Like, how cognizant are you of, like, your mental health? And maybe, you know what, maybe I need a date to myself. Maybe I'm not going to do this today. Maybe I need to do this today. Like how did you maintain your mental health?
Mental health, that's big. You know, it's big, especially in the sport of boxing. Like, there's so many ups and fucking downs. Like, I'm talking about, you build your motherfucking self up. Me and Figueroa, we about to fucking get it. I'm ready. You know, died and everything. And then he pulls out, or, you know, the fight card cancels, or maybe it's COVID, who fucking knows. And then it's just like a pile of fucking bricks, you know? And it's like, shit, it's just so fucking much. But you still got to pull yourself up and find a way. So I do encourage everybody, you know, fans, fighters, athletes, to, yeah, go seek some help and talk to somebody, or shit, if you got to, look in the motherfucking mirror and talk to yourself, you know? Like, they say geniuses talk to themselves because it keeps them on task. It keeps them sharp when you talk to yourself, apparently, allegedly. I don't know. But mental health is huge, you know, especially in the sport of boxing, but it's just something, you know, you got to understand you're living with it. Like, it's not just going to fucking go away. You're going through shit. Maybe you need to talk to somebody. Maybe you need to slow down on the drinking or the, you know, smoking or whatever the fuck you're doing. Because, life's a lot shorter than what people think.
No, you're absolutely right about that. Now, like, I don't know if you want to talk about this, but you did mention earlier that it's been, like, basically, like, 11 years since you talked to your pops. Is that, like, a relationship that you might want to, like, mend in the future? Or you're just, like past it for now?
Well, you know, so I have my perspective on things because, like, everybody goes through what they go through. You know, it's like, maybe you grew up and you're close to your mom. Like, man, that's my fucking mom. I killed for my mom. Or, oh, that's your mother. But you don't know the relationship. You know what I'm saying? Or with your pops. Like, my daughter was born, you know, she was a year. You know, there was, like, family stuff that went on and everything. But whatever, you know. So I went to my pop's barbershop. And I was like, oh, you know, maybe, you know, one day I can bring my daughter by and, you know, say hi or whatever. And he was like, why? You're a stranger. And I was like, you know, I kind of thought about it. I'm like, damn, I mean, I don't know. There was nothing in me that really wanted that to happen. It's just like, shit, I just thought that's what people fucking did. You know, like, technically your grandpa type shit. That's just what I fucking thought. And then, you know, I've never been back. Never talked to him again. You know, after I won my first title, he tried to FaceTime me. I didn't know if it was him or not, you know, so I called him back. I was like, oh, I wasn't sure this was you, you know, blah, blah. And it's, you know, 3-hour time different in Michigan. It was late. He's like, oh, yeah, it was me. But, you know, I'm going to get some sleep. And I was like, okay. And then that was it. And that was years ago, you know. There was just things in my childhood. My pops was a great father, you know, but, you know, it's just, I don't know. I don't really see us having a relationship. Like, I'm no problem giving them a call and saying this or saying that, but you got to understand the relationship we have. It's like, hey, we drive and the music's gone, going on. Somebody turns the music down. Like, oh, your dad died. Okay, why you cut the music down? Like, the fuck? I'm a stranger. Or, I mean, this is just what it is. And it's like, hey, it's just the hand I'm dealt. I don't know.
No, I definitely understand. You know, I appreciate you opening up about that because, you know, not very many people would talk about that, especially, you know, in a public setting. It's, I feel like a lot of times our familial relationships are the dynamic is kind of weird where people just say, oh, you know, well, that's your mother or that's your father. But they don't understand the family dynamic. They don't understand the history behind it. So
exactly, you know, exactly.
Yeah. No, I completely. Yeah, I understand that. I understand that completely, man. Do you have a little bit of time? Take some questions from the fans because you know sometimes the fans like to come talk to the fighters. If you got time,
I got time.
So if you guys have a question for Rais the Beast, Aleem, featherweight contender. You know, one of the best fighters in the world, send us a request right now and we'll add you on. In the meantime, Ez, you got anything for Rais?
No, I thought the performance, I really liked your last performance. I want to see you versus one of the best guys at 126. So it sounds like that's what we're getting soon. So I'm excited to see it, man. I think he deserved a shot like that for a while. So I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And, you know, I made a promise to myself, you know what I'm saying? Like, my next fight, I don't care who it is. I don't care where it is. I'm gonna be 10 times better than my last performance. You know, like I said, you know, hey, you get 3 hours of sleep and you still find a way to fucking win. Shit, you know, that's saying something. But I'm making it a point to show up and show the fuck out.
Imagine how you perform with a full night of sleep.
Oh yeah, no, right, fucking facts.
I'm like, damn, you sound like me, man. Sometimes I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's like, man, hey, that shit fucking sucks. But it's like, you know, when you're living with it, it's like you just fucking deal with it. You know, it's like, hey, it ain't no fucking excuse. Fuck that. It's what it is.
I like when people be like, oh, you know, that's unhealthy. No shit. You think I
don't speak? Right. Like, oh, like, yeah. You think I got a choice in this shit? Like, hey, yo.
Like, damn, that is crazy. That is fucking crazy, man. Who'd you pattern your fighting style after? Because, like you said, you didn't really come up with a coach like that. How did you even come up with your fighting style?
Really, I think karate. You know, like I'm not one dimensional. I can go left, I can go right. You know, I can even. So I feel stronger southpaw, but I'm more fluent orthodox. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I'm mainly orthodox. But honestly, it just kind of morphed into what it is now. You know, they used to always say, oh, don't fight with your left hand down and this, and that. And it's like, you know what? I'm going to let Rais Aleem be Rais Aleem. I'm just going to be me. And my style just kind of morphed into what it is now.
Do you think if someone was like, hey, we're going to kind of build you from scratch, like technically, do you think it'd make you less of a fighter doing that than what you do now? Because I think it would. I think what you do now is your best.
Yeah, I agree. So the thing is, it's like you could be fighting an awkward guy, and I can fight more technical, but I have the ability to be awkward, which gives guys a harder time. You know, so like when you do certain things, and then next year you know the guys, you know, he's looking at you just a little bit differently, meaning like, you know, he's thinking a little bit more. So it's like, okay, let me keep doing that. But to have the ability to be able to do it at a high level to where you're not just getting fucking caught left and right or walked down, you know, that could make or break a fight.
Yeah, that is dope. That is fucking dope, man. Yeah, because I was just thinking about your last few performances. I was like, because I remember when I saw you, like, appear on the top rank card out of nowhere in November, I was like, is that the same Rais Aleem? I was like, no way. Yeah. I'm not going to front. I was excited. I'm like, yo, I haven't seen you fight in a minute, you know, and I'm like, yo, we need to, you know, get Rais back in the ring. Because, like, listen, I used to watch you on all the PBC cards and stuff like that. So I was like, I know that you could go to work. I was just like, damn, when is he going? Because I thought you was going to get the full fight. I wasn't sure what happened. You know, I don't know. Well, you say that he basically didn't want the fight. You know, how fans talk, oh, well, maybe Rice did this, maybe Rice did that. You know, fans always talk about how fighters, I guess, fights themselves out, or a fighter does this and want to fight. What's the business side of boxing that fans don't know about, but we talk about constantly?
Yeah, no, so I didn't price myself out. Send me a fucking price. You feel me? Hey, what's up? We can't even get that far. You know, what the fans don't know is just like Espinoza, you know, typically they'll give you three guys. You know, you can fight A, B, or C. Or they give you two guys. Hey, look, you can fight A or B. It's up to the champ. Hey, you the champ? Okay. Well, Espinoza, who's the easier fucking fight? Oh, well, I'd rather fight him than him. I'd rather fight Carlos Castro than Raisa Aleem. I'd rather fight Jesse Magliano than Raisa Aleem. You know what I'm saying? And it has nothing to do with being priced out or anything like that, because we ain't even talking about prices and shit. We ain't talking about none of that. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know, the luck of the fucking draw. And that's why I got to be a mandatory, because I got to force these guys to, hey, you got to fight or you got to fucking vacate. This ain't going to be no A, B, C, D ass shit. This is you're fighting him or you're vacating. You know, that's the situation I have to put myself in if I want to get these big fights, because ain't nobody jumping to fight the best fighter in the division. Who's jumping to do that shit? Well, I want to. I'm trying to be that fucking guy. You know, I want to fight the best in the division. And then when I'm the champ, when I beat Espinoza or Angela Leo or whatever, I want the highest ranking fucking contender. I want the best fucking fighter. I want to be remembered for having the big fucking fights and winning. Like, that's why I'm in the fucking sport. I want to prove I'm one of the best fighters out there. Like, shit, I'm not trying to cherry pick, you know? Like, what the fuck? Fuck that.
I got a question from one of the listeners. They want to know, who was the best guy that you fought so far in your career?
The best guy I fought so far in my career. That's a tough one. I mean, are you asking like the best guy or like my hardest fight or like?
I'm assuming that they mean your hardest fight. Like,
Shit. You know, when I fought Marcus Bates the first time, you know, coming off a 2.5 year layoff, 8-0 fighter, 8 knockouts. Nah, it ain't that fight. That fight wasn't that hard. a good fight, but you know, maybe it was Pacias, you know, because it's like shit, just everything going on in the world, you know, like it was the bubble. Really only the top fucking fighters were fighting, you know. I'd say between Pacias and Mike Plania. When I fought Plania, that was probably the first time I was truly proud of my win. And it's not just because I won, it's how I did it. It's the execution. You know, everything I wanted to do in my head, I was able to execute. You know, my mind, my body, everything was just aligned. And, you know, the preparation for the fight, during the fight, after the fight, everything was in sync. So that was my proudest win, my proudest performance, my proudest win. I'm drinking water the day of weigh-ins, you know what I'm saying? Shit like that, you know, and I was able to eat breakfast, everything. And just that was my proudest moment. That was, that was my proudest fight, my proudest win for sure. And I didn't knock him out. I mean, hey, 10 more seconds I do, but it's not even about knocking him out. It was just the performance, the preparation, and just everything all around.
No, that's dope. I got another question from one of the listeners. They want to know, what is one thing about you that people might not know?
One thing about me that people may not know is... I mean, although I am humble, you know, I'm also outspoken, you know. Yeah, you know, I'm a people person. What's that?
Your mic went out, Matt. We can't hear you.
No, I was saying I think they know it now.
Yeah. I mean, hey, look, at the end of the day, I'm low-key, I'm chill, I'm in my lane. You know, it's like, really, I'm the lone fucking wolf. You know, it's like, if you got 50 guys doing one thing, I'm trying to do what they're not. I don't follow trends. I don't try to fit in. Like, I do my fucking program in life. Like, that's just the way I move. Like, you know, my pop said a long time ago, like, hey, you be a loner in this life, you'll go far. I mean, I've been dragged into some crazy shit, you know, some 48-hour shit, some like, hey, yo, and I start fucking with everybody. And next thing you know, like, my life start coming together and click, 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 click. It's like, all right, well, I guess I'm supposed to be on this path and not on that other shit, you know? So, yeah.
Another question for one of the listeners. What is your after weigh-in meal?
So tradition is fucking Olive Garden. It's just fucking tradition. My after weigh-in meal.
What's the go-to plate there? What's the go-to plate at Olive Garden?
So it's chicken Alfredo, or it's like, okay, it's seafood Alfredo with grilled chicken, grilled shrimp. Motherfucking 12 breadsticks, but you gotta understand.
This ain't bad, honestly. This is a good meal.
Oh, facts. But it's not just one, it's two. Like, I'm talking about, I paid like $110. So I'll, because that's my after weigh-in meal, and then that's my breakfast slash lunch for the next day. You feel me?
So you eat that fight day too? You eat that fight day
too? Yeah, eat that fight day too. Yo.
That seems suspect, but all right.
That I mean, cause like that's the breakfast, but hey, I'm getting the carbs back into my body, you know. And then hey, it tastes good and shit too. But yeah.
I got a question from the viewers, and someone asked, would you be interested in doing the, I don't know if you've seen the combat karate? But would you ever look to getting back to karate in a make a comeback to karate?
Man, hey, yo, I'm not gonna lie, karate was fun. Hey, I was really on my Cobra Kai shit. Karate was fun as fuck. You know, I used to be able to fucking do the splits. I used to be able to kick over my head, you know, doing katas and tournaments and all that, you know, all first place trophies. And I did get one second place because I kicked the dude in the nuts. But karate was fun as fuck. Would I get back into it? I wouldn't compete in it, but I wouldn't mind mentoring, you know, especially at-risk kids, you know, or kids who've never left their own city or anything like that. Because that's what boxing did for me, you know, being from a small town in Muskegon, Michigan, being able to go to the nationals and go here and there, just see that there's just more to life in general. You know, it's like, fuck, you know, oh, wait, I get to travel for free and fight somebody? Sign me the fuck up. Let's go. You know, so yeah, I would definitely mentor some kids or, you know, teenagers or whatever. I think that'd be dope.
Do you have maybe any interest in the future in this like new TKO boxing venture? Because it seems like they're reaching out to a lot of fighters.
Yeah. They've reached out to me. They've reached out to me, and you know, they kind of, you know, sent me their turns. And you know, one of the guys like, oh man, you know, you're already one of the top fighters. You'd be, you know, it's, I don't know. It's, you know, it's like you do that. Because boxing, hey, look, boxing's not only hard, but it's a dirty motherfucking business. So you want to go fuck with TKO and you want to burn the bridge with Golden Boy, Matchroom, and all these other promoters and just think shit's going to be sweet when that shit don't go the way it's supposed to go and they just going to take you back with open arms when you already got to fucking scratch, claw, cry, bleed for a chance? Nah. No,
I don't. You don't give us the exact numbers, but what were the terms decent? Were they respectable or?
Not really. I you know, and then because it's also new, so it's like, okay, you know, once they're up and running for a few years, I think their numbers will kind of change. And it's not even so much about the numbers. It's also kind of like the concept. It's like, you know, you got to be what, like ranked top five to make this much, or, you know, they'll say you fight this amount of times, but, you know, I don't want to be no fucking guinea pig, you know? I ain't trying to burn the bridge, you know? I do want to become a solidified world champion. WBA, WBO, WBC, you know, all this creating new belts, and, hey, good luck to them. I'm not quite sure, but I don't really think it's for me. At least not right now.
who are some of the fighters that you like to watch?
Just in general, you know, gotta love watching Tank fight. You know, I've always been a Crawford fan. You know, so watching Crawford fight. You know, hey, if he doesn't switch southpaw fighting Gamboa, whoo, I don't know, but I'm glad he did it. You know, just different fighters. You know, I like watching Shakur, you know, not because it's super exciting, but his skill, you know, everything he brings to the table. You know, I like watching Shakur fight. Bivol, you know, a little bit of Bivol, you know, I'm not super high on him, but I mean, great fighter. You know, still like watching Canelo. You know, Usyk, you know, like watching him. Those are just, you know, some just to throw out there.
Yeah, no doubt. Who would you say are like the best pound for pound fighters in the world right now?
Well, you know, I would have to say Canelo. You know, Inoue, Tank. Usyk, for sure.
That's a solid lineup right there, man.
Yeah, no.
That's a solid lineup. I guess one of the listeners wanted to play, like, word association. They want to know, like, just, like, the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear of these fighters. So I'm just going to throw some fighters' names out there, and you just let me know the first word that comes to your mind when you hear it. All right, let's start with Stephen Fulton.
Great fighter.
Naoya Inoue.
Fucking amazing fighter. Just, you know, just when you talk about being completely well-rounded, minus the chin. But nah, great, amazing fighter.
Okay. Sam Goodman.
You know, good fighter, not great, but, you know, good fighter, solid fighter.
And finally, Rais Aleem.
fucking dog, you know. I'd say great, but I have to make the fans say that. I don't want to say that. I'm just going to refer to myself as a fucking dog. Willing to do whatever it fucking takes to get the job done.
No doubt. Now, like, obviously we know you're doing the Price of Top Rank. You're probably going to get a title shot, I would say, within the next 6 to 12 months. Or do you feel like you're finally on the right path to where you thought you would be in your career?
I agree. I do think the title shot's coming within the next 6 to 12 months. Hopefully it's next, you know, or it's that step before that. But, you know, we'll see. And, yeah, I do think I am on the right path. Honestly, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you know, it's like should have been on this path. But everything happens for a reason. You know, it is what it is. We make decisions every single fucking day that determine where we're at right now. So, you know, hey, I'm on this path now for a reason, and I think everything's going to come together, and I'm hoping to just be more active for the fans so people can really just see more of Ra'ee Salim.
What should the fans expect to see when they tune in to see a Ra'ee Salim fight?
Action. You know, like when I step in the ring, it's like, you know, you don't only see action, you see skill, you know, but you also see a different fighting style. You know, you're not seeing somebody who's just fucking holding left and right and fucking, or just skipping around the ring, running, you know, you see action, you see skill, you see somebody who wants to fucking win.
Well, you know, speaking of running, we saw like this past weekend those fights in Times Square get a lot of criticism. And listen, I'm gonna talk about it. Fuck it, you know.
Yo, facts.
We saw what people had to say about guys like Devin Haney, and then even in Saudi Arabia, like William Skull. Like, mm-hmm. What's your take on stuff like that, where the fans are like overly critical of a fighter's style of fighting?
I mean. Like, I feel like it's one thing for fans to be critical of a guy's style of fight, but it's another thing for a fighter to get in the ring and not fucking fight. Now, the objective is to hit and not get hit. You know what I'm saying? You want to box, but, you know, this is business. You know, you want to box and be entertaining, you know? Like William Skull, or that was crazy with Canelo. That was crazy. But goddamn, the Devin Haney fight. You know, I'm sure Ramirez got some pop on his punch, but he's not known for being like a knockout artist. And just that performance, you know, because Haney to me, you know, he's a little bit more cocky. Like, I feel like he's got the big head, but his performances.
Hey, listen, don't say too much. I don't want Bill Haney tweeting you all day, man.
Yeah. You know, like, but here's the thing. You can't take anything away from him, because at the end of the day, when it comes to boxing, it's all about winning and fucking losing. It doesn't matter how you win. You got to find a way to win. But that's the way you chose to win. You don't deserve no big fucking paydays. You don't deserve to be no headliner or nothing like that. It's just, you know, that's how I feel, you know.
No doubt. We're going to wrap this up because, you know, we already took up enough of your time, man. We've been going for like over an hour. Just tell the people where they can find and support you at.
Hey, look, you can follow me on IG at Ra'ee Salim Boxing. You know, I'm going to be coming out with merch soon. I'm looking to be a little bit more active on social media. I'm just a low-key, chill-ass nigga, you know, just trying to make it. I'm just somebody trying to make it, you know. But follow me, support me. I love all the boxing fans, whether you're mine or not. This is the sport I love. So thank you for tuning in.
Well, got to get you more active on Twitter, too, because you tweet, like, literally, like, once a year, man. And you didn't even tweet since 2023, man. What's going on?
Yeah, it's like, and then here's the thing. In the day and age to where people put their entire life on social media, I don't want to be like everybody else. I just want to be me. I'm on my program. And you're right. I could post. I got shit to post. I just keep it fucking moving. Yeah.
Well, listen, you're always welcome here. Feel free to come chop it up with us anytime. You know, we do a lot of spaces every Saturday, sometimes during the week, you know, just to talk boxing with the fans. Man, I'm telling you, you got a lot of fans out here, man. You got to, you know, you got to let the people touch you, man. Pause.
Yeah. No, I hear you for sure. Yeah, I'll be in touch. You know, I appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me on. And I'll be in touch in the future for sure.
Ra'ee the Beast Aleem, ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
Let's follow him. He got some merch coming soon. Ra'ee Salim, boxer on Instagram. Obviously, you see him here. Ra'ee Salim, make sure you guys go give him a follow, support his journey. He is one of the best featherweights in the world. And you heard him. He ain't ducking no smoke. He want to fight everybody. He said, Angelo Leo, I'm coming for you. He said, Rafael Espinosa, I'm coming for you. He said, Stephen Fulton, don't duck me, son. You know, so he here to fight everybody.
Man, I thought you would go Booker T with that one. I was like, hold up.
I was about to. I was about to, but we you know, it's mixed company. I
just really
think he got a pass
with Theo. Yeah. he was talking about Twitter. I'm like, maybe he's like Gary Russell Jr. when it comes to Twitter.
Ah, man, that was fun, though, man. Listen, I hope all of you guys enjoyed this edition of Brunch Boxing with Raissa Leem. Make sure you support the platform. Go sign up for the Brunch Boxing website. Go subscribe to the Brunch Boxing podcast on Spotify or Twitter. And as always, hit the Cash App. Y'all know the Cash App. Dollar sign, is that your face? I got PayPal, too, if y'all need that. You know, support the platform. Support the program. Make sure you guys go check out my guy, The Boxing Source, on YouTube, on the internet, on Spotify, The Boxing Source. Ezra got a nice Ezra breakdown coming for you guys this week on Rolly Romero. Rolly is good, or is he? Ezra
will I've seen the fight twice now. Oh, the breakdown's coming out tonight.
Yeah, we'll see. Hey, listen, don't give it away. We'll see.
I've seen it now twice.
I need to see what Ezra's going to say. This is going to be the first Ezra breakdown that I actually watch. It's going to be the first one that I watch. Because
I might make it. You know what? This might be my godfather. It might be 3 hours long. Honestly. Because in order to really break down this fight, we would have to break down like his five previous fights to really get to the bottom of this.
Hey, listen. Whatever you got to do is whatever you got to do. All I know is Bob Arum agrees with me, too. Bob Arum takes Rolly Romero over Devin Haney. I just want to point that out. So shout out to
Bob Arum. I love boxing. It's like every weekend could change everyone's exact opinion on everything.
Hey, listen, the thing I love about boxing is one punch changes everyone's whole perspective about you. That's the great thing about boxing, man. And in Rolly's case, it was two punches, a double left hook, baby.
Let's go. What does Sting say? The only thing's for sure is that nothing's for sure.
Exactly. But this has been another edition of Brunch Boxing. I want to give a shout out to all the people that tuned in. I see my guy, Bandalorian here. He's going to be at the MVP Prospect Show tomorrow and then at the Pro Box Show on Saturday. I see my guy Tro here. He's going to be at the OTX Show tomorrow, so shout out to him. Appreciate you guys, man. Shout out to my guy Cliff, Roll Boxing, the Corner Stool Substack. Make sure you guys go check that out. I see my girl Nike in here. Women Crushing It Wednesdays, every Wednesday on YouTube. In the Ring with Christine, Nika, Crystal, you know the ladies, the queens of this boxing talk. Make sure you guys go support them.
But this the is real queen. Oops, I didn't say that.
Yeah, this is another edition of Brunch Boxing. He is our COO, the Mexican Al Heyman Mike. He is our host, Ezra Boxing. I am Matt. We are Brunch Boxing, and we are out. Shout out to Huey, the producer.